All right, let's have the Marshall call court back into session.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Frisch, Judge Gaetis, Judge Klopaki, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is February 2nd, 2022. We are here for our second of five cases on our calendar this morning, A190457, Campbell versus State of Minnesota. Counsel, just a few housekeeping matters. Please mute your microphone if you are not speaking. I'd ask that you state your name and your client's name before you begin speaking because these matters are being recorded. You each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant has an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. With that, counsel, you may proceed.
Your Honors, my name is Bruce Rivers. I represent Mr. David Campbell, the appellant in this matter. This is a case where Mr. Campbell had asked the court for a continuance on the day of trial through his counsel of record back in 2018. And his counsel of record indicated that had met with him and he'd be ineffective and it wouldn't be fair for him to go to trial. That was on the 18th of October, I believe. The court then, or maybe September. And the court then said the case had been, languishing for a year and denied the request for continuance. Then they started jury selection. And as they started jury selection, the defense decided to agree to a stipulated evidence trial where 52 exhibits were submitted to the court. Our argument basically is that the defense counsel here was ineffective and actually said he was ineffective on a couple of occasions to the court. He didn't have the chance to meet with his client, didn't have the chance to explain.
Explain that to me. What do you mean he didn't have the chance to meet with his client?
Well,
what was he doing from the time of his taking this case on until this date of trial?
I don't exactly know. It's just a bold
statement that he hadn't had a chance to meet with his client. No detail.
I believe he said that he had a couple meetings scheduled, but the client didn't. The client didn't show up for the meeting.
Was the client out on bail?
I believe he was. The client was a former Minneapolis police officer accused of criminal sexual conduct. And but in addition to that, the counsel for the defense did not file any parity motion. Counsel did not hire an expert and, in fact, didn't even know that the state was going to be using their forensic examiner as an expert until the very last minute. And then some time goes by, just roughly a week goes by, and this is typical of somebody who's not prepared, where they decide, okay, well, we start jury selection, I'm nervous about it, and then he convinces his client to do a stipulated evidence trial, which is what they do the very next day, and they submit 52 exhibits, all of which are voluminous, especially the interviews with the alleged victim, and so there's no way that I don't know if the court can take judicial notice of this, but there's no way that you could have gone through all that stuff, all the exhibits with the defendant in that short period of time in any kind of
the defense apparently here, at least for part of it, was that LMG's reputation for truthfulness was an item of importance. Was there anything in the stipulated evidence that addressed that question?
No, there really wasn't. I mean, there's some medical records, but those were submitted by Corner House or submitted as part of a Corner House package. They had information that the alleged victim in the case had bipolar and was on medication, but no request for those records was ever obtained. No, and that's why a parity motion, I think, in this case would have been critical. And the defense submitted zero evidence. So imagine, if you will, if there was a jury trial and somebody sat there as a defense lawyer and didn't ask a single question. That certainly would be ineffective. And that's what this is tantamount here.
Well, let's assume for the purposes of argument that counsel's performance fell below an objective standard of reasonableness. What is the evidence that the outcome would have been different, well, but for counsel's actions or inactions?
Isn't that almost an impossible standard in a sense? Because
I don't think so.
Well, I mean, if the lawyer doesn't do anything and we don't have any evidence that the lawyer did something to prove that they could have won the case, I think had you gotten the records, had you had a meaningful cross-examination, it's a he said, she said case, and he was able to offer an explanation, certainly it would have given him a much more level playing field.
Don't we have a valid waiver of jury trial rights here, and you know, rights to cross-examine and all of the associated trial rights where you could have the opportunity to cross-examine witnesses and challenge the evidence in a way that you don't when you agree to a stipulated evidence trial.
But do we have a knowing and intelligent waiver when we don't have a meaningful consultation with the client, where he has a vast knowledge of what the file is all about? If you look at even when they talk about the Blakely factors, the lawyer didn't know what they were, and on the record he asks the county attorney, well, what were those again? We have a colloquy where we just have this simple yes or no's, you know, and he's just answering yes to every single question. And so I think the court has looked on that with disfavor when we have guilty pleas, and all we have is just a simple, you know, isn't this true? Yes, 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 yes. That's why some judges go at length to say, well, okay, what did you did that makes you guilty? And they have to actually say, and I think that's a better practice. Here we have almost the same thing. And it just strikes me that if you had the parity motion granted with the records showing that this person has lied about this kind of thing in the past, it would certainly call into question her credibility. And then you have a veteran of the over 20 years on the Minneapolis Police Force with a stellar record testifying on his behalf. I think that the outcome certainly is likely to have been different.
Mr. Rivers, wasn't there a pretrial motion brought to impeach the victim's credibility that the district court denied? Impeach her credibility with some records that were available to the defense without a parity motion?
Right. And basically that was if I'm not mistaken, it was a 412 motion. And they withdrew their 412 request, and we're going to have some other kind of testimony from one of the, from I think the victim's mother about her credibility, but that never came to fruition.
But didn't the district court indicate that evidence was not going to be admissible? And I guess what I'm getting at is, if that wasn't admissible, aren't we just speculating that, you know, this anything that was discovered through a parity motion, which we don't know, also would have been admissible? I mean, aren't we at a real disadvantage here because we're required to just rely on speculation about what the record would be?
Well, there is some evidence in the record that she did suffer from bipolar and was on medication. So those two things are out there. And there is evidence that she did fabricate other allegations of a sexual assault. But isn't that the game we're in, though, in a sense, is we have to kind of use our best knowledge we have to figure out what would have happened on that second prong. And my sense is that the lack of preparation in this case is so bad in this that the poor fellow just didn't have a defense at all. And it's pretty clear what happened here. I mean, what happened here is he's not prepared on the day to go to trial. He says he doesn't know what his defense is. Those were his words. A week goes by, and then he convinces him to do a stipulated facts trial where you don't have to cross-examine anybody, and then it just gets thrown up to the court, which is basically a slower guilty.
What were the other items of the agreement that led to the stipulation of facts trial? Did the defendant get something out of that? What was that again?
It was a range. You agree to the stipulated facts trial or stipulated evidence trial. And if you're found guilty, it's 36 months on the low end and 56 months on the high end. And he got the high end.
That's it?
That was sum total of the agreement. And
how did that depart from the what would have been the guidelines sentence?
I think the guideline sentence was 41 to 48 months, right? I think the middle of the range was 48 months. So it was a little bit above the guidelines and a little bit below the guidelines. And, you know, the other thing that I had a problem with in looking at this case is that during the presentation of all the exhibits, the county attorney's office of the state was able to explain what each, and they really made an argument as to what each piece of evidence was, and there was absolutely no objection about any piece of evidence by the defense. There was no no counter to what the state was saying, and so it's like, here's a body of work. Go find him guilty. And it's just, to me, it shocks the conscience. So in our brief, you know, we argue about the parity motion, about the lack of communication and the lack of investigation on the file. And when you have a defendant who shows up to court on the day of trial, not having any preparation done whatsoever, and then he's forced into a trial a week later, it strikes me that we should try to correct this wrong and give him his trial, withdraw the guilty plea, or not guilty plea, reverse the conviction. And let it go forward with trial, because it was not a knowing and intelligent waiver, among other things. So I guess I know I've got a couple minutes left, and unless you have more questions, that's all I've got for this part.
Thank you, Mr. Rivers. Anything else from the panel this morning? All right, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. We'll reset the clock for you, Mr. Schmidt. Anytime you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel John Schmidt, Assistant Hennepin County Attorney on behalf of the state of Minnesota. This court should affirm because trial counsel's performance was not ineffective and because appellant cannot establish that the outcome would have been different but for counsel's errors. I'll start with the statements about being ineffective. The counsel did say that on September 18th, but then to quote exactly said, "I will be effective in representing him and cross-examining the state's witnesses. I do not know Mr. Campbell's story. I do not know his defense." Counsel was prepared in terms of cross-examining the state and
that's
going forward with that.
That's not much of a statement, however. I gather every lawyer ought to be prepared to handle a cross-examination of some statements, but he doesn't know what the defendant's theory is and doesn't know what the defendant's defense is. You know, you're going to ask questions that you don't know what the answers are going to be, and most lawyers don't want to do that.
For sure. But then, Judge, what we had was a break in between those statements and when
trial started. Is there any explanation why he wasn't prepared? Why he said he hadn't talked to his client? His client was out on bail, apparently.
The only explanation was at that September 18th hearing where counsel stated, on a number of occasions, I've invited him to come to my office, 3 or 4 occasions. He has not been able to do so. It's on page 9 of the September 18th transcript.
And this lawyer was privately retained by the defendant.
That's what it appears so, yes. Well, he was appointed, he was appointed as a public defender. And then I believe Mr. Rivers was there that morning to substitute in. And the court said this case has been pending for quite a while. So we're going forward. And they then had a break between September 18th and when trial started. And during that break, it is clear from the record that trial counsel and the defendant met. And there's an exchange where they specifically addressed the communication issues that they had or the lack of communication that they had. And that's on page 34 to 35 of the beginning of the trial transcript. In there, they talk about, we've met in person. We talked about your case. Do you feel you have had enough time to talk to me about your case? And the defendant says yes to all those questions. So in between September 18th and when trial started, they did have a number of communication. And defense attorney on page 38 of that transcript said he was fully prepared to go to trial and appellant agreed. So during that time, they did have sufficient time to meet. And talk about the case.
Mr. Schmidt, Judge Klopacki asked Mr. Rivers about any benefit that Mr. Campbell may have received from proceeding this way, as opposed to having a full jury trial. Could you please address that question?
Sure. Well, there's the range, as counsel noted, of 36 to 56 months, but Blakely was also in play here. And so although the presumptive would be around 48 months, it could have gone higher on a Blakely factors had they been proven. And so that the stipulated evidence takes that out of play and puts it into a fixed range.
Just to clarify, sorry to interrupt. So did the state take Blakely off the table in exchange for the decision to proceed via stipulated evidence and with a court trial?
It's not entirely clear in the record, but what is clear is what the agreement was, where they had a fixed range. And so they've got a low end, they've got a high end.
Effectively negating the possibility of Blakely factors.
Correct.
Okay.
The other piece about the stipulated evidence, though, it shows that the defense, the closing argument that defense counsel submitted shows that this was a strategic decision. The defense argued that the evidence submitted was insufficient because the state lacked evidence, that all those exhibits shows lack of the state meeting its burden of proof. The state lacked cooperation and failed to meet its burden. And so within that, in the closing arguments, it shows that this was a strategic decision and that it was appropriate to proceed by stipulated evidence. Now, we can always second guess what could have happened had they gone to trial and had they made different choices. But when you come to, that's exactly why appellate courts don't second guess strategic choices or a trial attorney's investigation.
What is strategic about not asking for a Blakely review? Not Blakely review, a in-camera review, a party review. What could possibly be strategic about that?
I'm speculating here, and that's part of the problem is we're doing a lot of speculation in terms of what would have the result been but for counsel's performance. I can speculate that he learned of his counsel's story. He learned of his counsel's defense, and it wasn't good. And there really wasn't much that they could put on. They had the squad car location. They had the body cameras. There was plenty of evidence that was against the defendant. So it may have been better strategic.
Is that even if there had been something in the pardee motion hearing that would have gone to the credibility of the alleged victim here, that it wouldn't have amounted to a whole lot based upon all the other evidence. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. And I apologize, Judge. I was mixing up the stipulated evidence with the parity. And so as to the parity, to address that question, we have in the record that the attorney had done some investigation, had the child protection records. So what we're speculating on here is that if he had filed a motion, and if that motion had been granted, and given the fact that the district court judge did deny on the record the other attempt to get an impeachment evidence, which was a long discussion between pages 13 and 25 of that transcript, it's not likely that that parity motion would have been granted. So I think the trial counsel's, the strategic choice here, I guess, is the idea of he had the child protection records and didn't feel to go down the parity road. All of that said, though, we're still speculating on, but for counsel's performance, the outcome would have been different. We don't know what's in those records. We don't know whether the district court would have granted that. That's the whole purpose of a post-conviction proceeding, where you go and have a hearing and you figure these things out. There was no offer of proof on any of this stuff of what would have been revealed had a parity motion been provided. And that's the same thing is true with the stipulated evidence and arguments and the communication issues. There is nothing in this record to show but for counsel's performance, the outcome would have been different. And I'll note that the communication with the appellant, there was no one once trial started. Not only did they have that exchange where appellant agreed that he had plenty of time to meet with his attorney, there was no additional motion for a continuance. The attorney said he's fully prepared to go forward and did. Unless there are other questions, this court can affirm on either grounds of the Strickland factors. I think the but for the performance ground is probably the easiest because there's just a lot of speculation that has to occur to meet that factor. And I will ask that the court affirm and rest on my brief.
All right. Thank you. Anything else on the panel this morning? All right. Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. We'll reset the clock for you, Mr. Rivers. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. And you are muted.
I do that all the time. I'm sorry. A defendant has a Sixth Amendment right to the effective assistance of counsel. The legal strategy, and looking at a closing argument, just trying to poke holes in whatever evidence that the state has, just by saying that they don't have evidence is no legal strategy at all. And there wasn't any legal strategy here at all. One might argue, I guess, that you could say they were trying to limit the damage by creating this range and thereby limiting the sentencing options for the court.
Mr. Rivers, it sounds to me like this was a bit of, I think you characterized it as like a slow roll guilty plea. The benefit is a sentence within the presumptive range in a case where, there were arguably aggravating factors that could have resulted in a sentencing departure. And the other benefit is that Mr. Campbell didn't have to actually make any admissions that the district court would be responsible for that. I mean, that's a thing that happens. And that's what this looks like. I mean, isn't that sort of an alternative explanation for what happened here? And if so, how and why should we be second guessing that?
Well, you've got a client or a defendant who's going into this blind. Essentially, I mean, he shows up a week before trial, not knowing anything about his case and the lawyer not knowing anything about him. That week is not enough to go through all those exhibits. There's 52 exhibits. Some are tens of pages long in terms of the transcripts, in terms of the video evidence. and there's no expert even inquired about.
But didn't we have, I would assume that he would have been aware of the Facebook conversations, Campbell's bank statements, his own officer worn body cam, the photos of him or LMG on his cell phone, the records of the squad car. I gathered that he would have had all access to all of that since he stipulated to that as being evidence. That doesn't take a whole lot of in-depth research to look at these things. Well, that's all pretty damaging evidence. So what difference would it have made if he'd had more time or
context? Everything matters in context, you know, and there's zero context putting it. These exhibits are basically the context is provided by the state and nothing by the defense, zero. And I hate it when I get these cases like this, because, you know, when you only hear one story, it's going to be a guilty. And that's why like Judge Gaetis had mentioned a slow roll guilty plea, because that's exactly what it was. But the defendant thinks he's got a chance. And it's just so clear on his face as to what happened here. And he was talked into this arrangement because the lawyer wasn't prepared. So, and that's all I have, unless anybody's got any other questions.
Anything else from the panel this morning? All right. Thank you very much, counsel. The arguments were, and the submissions were very helpful. The matter is submitted. And we